You and these threes. I don't know how you be doing these threes. Welcome back to another episode of Afro Move Review, the podcast.
Yes, yes, y'all. The voice you hear is Mo. She, her pronouns, Afro Movie Reviewer, the Chocolate Chip Podcaster.
And I am Keeks, they, them pronouns, Afro Movie Reviewer, your favorite trans podcaster. Welcome back to episode 87.
Bye. Yeah. We getting big up there. It feels so good. Excited. How you feeling?
So excited for this. Especially the movie, Clueless, 1995. Yo. Oh my God, I can't wait to talk about it with you.
But I cannot wait. Keeks already won the, what is that game called?
We could have
paper scissors. Nope, you already won because we have been having tech issues, which is why the episode is delayed, and we've had some issues with even having this recording. So
late night
episode, but we're feeling good, and Keeks is going to kick us off.
Late night with AMR. So the very first fact is May 27th, actor Christopher Reeve, no S, is paralyzed from the neck down from falling from his horse in a riding competition in Culpeper, Virginia. So Christopher Reeve is an American actor, film director, author, and activist. He is Superman and its three sequels. So he got into horse riding in 1985 after filming Anna Karenina. Not sure how to pronounce that. But he was at one of those fancy equestrian events. His horse did a refusal where they stop right before they jump the gate or the fence, the little trick that they'd be doing. And it forced Reeve forward. His hands were tangled in the reins and the bridle. And the bit fell from the horse's mouth. And he landed headfirst, shattering his first and second vertebrae, paralyzing him from the neck down, unable to breathe without a ventilator. Mm. Unfortunately, his first thought was like, I'm going to be a burden to my wife. Maybe you should let me go. And his wife was like, you know, it's up to you, but you know, I'll be here with you no matter what happens or no matter what you decide. Mm-hmm. And she even described it as like a sales pitch. And she was like, talk to me again in 2 years. And he ended up living until October 10, 2004, where at the age of 52, he died of heart failure. So
I kind of wonder if him having portrayed Superman, who is the Man of Steel, to have broken in a way where he needed a machine to help him do like one of the most basic and vital things, breathing, if that had any effect on him feeling like he was a burden to his wife and she should just let him go. Because I can't imagine that type of injury would be easy for anybody to process, but for a person who played Superman, who so millions of people around the world look up, if you know what I mean, look up to you in that way, it was probably very difficult for him.
Yeah. Rest in peace. Him and his wife are now deceased, so.
One of my favorite people in the world. Shout out Frozen Orange. His favorite people in the world is Christopher Reeve and that version of Superman. He loves all things Superman, but that version of Superman I know is his guy. So shout out to Christopher Reeve.
Did they make a Superman? I'm sure they made a Superman after him. The way my mind is going blank, because I'm like, they have multiple Batmans, but I don't know.
They made others. They have the guy who played Henry Cavill, the guy who was in Smallville, I think it is.
Yeah, but that was like TV show wise. But like
he was also the TV. He was also the movie.
Okay. Superman. Okay. Because that was like we have multiple Batmans. I don't recall us having in the same sense of Batmans, multiple Supermans. And they're both
like the cinematic DC, universes. So. No. Yeah, they are both DC. Yep. Yeah, I think so.
I thought that was weird. But
yeah, they do. They do. Henry Cavill. Okay, so I am going to sandwich my facts. It's going to be because this is the women directed it season. So I'm going to start with October 16th, 1995. We have the Million Man March that is held in Washington, D.C. This is a fact that I've brought up before, but the way that this is going to be different is that we are going to mention the women who were involved in the actual presentation and things. So we have Mothers of the Struggle. They did a presentation called Behold Thy Sons. So we had Faye Williams, who was an attorney. She was the Washington, D.C. coordinator for the Million Man March. And then we had Rosa Parks and we had Dorothy I. Height. And then we also have affirmation of our brothers. So we have Cora Masters Barry, who was the first lady of the District of Columbia, who was the Masters of Ceremony. And then Dr. Betty Shabazz. And then we had remarks from, she did remarks. And then we had remarks from Tynetta Muhammad.
Yay. I love that so much.
Yeah, because we've talked about that. The Million Man March has been something that's been a fact on AMR a couple of times. But this time, you know, the spring. I don't think that we've ever talked about the women and who were involved. We talked about numbers. Right. We've talked about, you know,
behind every great man is a woman who did the labor.
Okay, because we've talked about the organization on the front end and what it looked like. And I didn't. This was the first time that I think I've thought to see what else was involved women wise. So, yeah.
So my next fact is women related. So August 9th, South Africa celebrates the first National Women's Day.
Sure enough.
South Africa has a public holiday to commemorate the 1956 march of 2,000 women to the union buildings to petition against the country's what they called pass laws that required South African people labeled as Black under the Population Registration Act to carry an internal passport, or what they called a passbook, and that served to maintain population segregation, control urbanization.
During the apartheid.
Yeah, and manage immigrant labor during the apartheid era. So women of all races marched, led by Lillian Ngoyi, and I probably should have got the pronunciation for that, I apologize. Helen Joseph, Rahima Musa, and Sophia Williams. They left 14,000 petitions at the office door of the Prime Minister at the time, J.G. Sturgeon. And the women stood silently for 30 minutes, then started to sing a protest song that was composed specifically for the occasion, that translates to, "Now you have touched the women, you have struck a rock." And that phrase, "You strike a woman, you strike a rock," has come to represent women's courage, strength. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So the meat of my sandwich is January 2nd, 1995. The most distant galaxy yet discovered is found by scientists using a Keck telescope in Hawaii.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, yeah, what?
An estimated 15 billion light years away. So this galaxy was formed when the universe was only 1/10 of its current age. I don't know how that calculate, you know, how they get to that calculation, but I think that's pretty magnificent that they have it. It was captured by the world's largest telescope. It is the 10-meter Keck telescope that is atop Mauna Kea. The reason that I am trying to make sure I get the pronunciation right is because I've actually been to Mauna Kea. It is in Hawaii. It is a peak that is 4,207.3 meters, which is 13,803 feet above sea level.
Oh, Lord.
It is the highest point in Hawaii. And it is the second highest point on an island in the world behind New Guinea. It snows there. So when I went,
hell no.
Yes, when I went, we tried to go as respectful as we could with acknowledgments to the locals and how they wanted people to move there. So we had a blast and the locals had a blast with us. We were told to go to we went to a Black sand beach. Like, we went to very awesome things because the locals were like, "Let me tell you how to get here and have fun." Mm-hmm. Mauna Kea, we had rented a car. We're going up and we realize it's pretty steep going up. They have a midpoint checkpoint. It just so happened it was the first snow of the season. So I get there. It's, you know, we get out the car and we said, because we knew we were going up. So have a jacket. The jackets we had were not enough. The guy at the top asks us, "Do you know how to drive the 4x4 option?" And I said, "I do not." And he said, "I can't let you go any further up the mountain." And I'm like, damn, because there was a Jeep in front of us. And I'm like, they are getting it up this mountain. At first we could see them. And then we saw them like way far ahead of us. And I was like, they are getting it up this mountain. It's because they knew how to hit that 4x4. Keeks, when I tell you the ride down from the checkpoint was the scariest shit I have ever experienced. Mm-hmm. Mauna Kea is high and steep. So, yeah, when I got down to the bottom of Mauna Kea, I stopped and Googled how to drive a 4x4 because I thought I didn't need it going down from the checkpoint. Lies!
Because that sounds, you said 13,000 feet above? No.
13,803 feet above sea level.
That's too high.
That's crazy. But yeah, shout out to that most distant galaxy, 15 yeah. billion light years away.
Wow.
Yeah.
My last fact is March 17th, the U.S. approved the first chickenpox vaccine, Variva, by Merck and Company. Sure. I was like, oh, that's so cool. But also, I was thinking about how we used to just let children get chickenpox. I said, that's filthy as fuck. Especially now that we know that once you get chickenpox, you can have shingles later on.
Baby, my mama used to put me in the room with kids who actively had chickenpox because she was like, why won't you get them?
I find that so filthy now. Like, and I get it. Like, yeah, they had a vaccine, but even the WHO at the time said that only if over 80% of the majority is vaccinated does vaccines work. So, and I'm like, and the things that it can cause, which I didn't know, encephalitis, inflammation of the brain, sepsis, pneumonia, toxic shock syndrome.
Not pneumonias.
Stroke in children, it accounts for 1/3 of children's strokes.
Not in the babies.
It's the
neurological.
The mini ones. The mini.
Oh, mini strokes? Uh-huh. Yeah.
And even death, I said, y'all was just letting people get infected with, that's filthy.
So, but what's crazy is that when I started school in Georgia, I had gone through my entire K-12 not vaccinated against it because maybe they didn't have it until 95. I'm not that fucking old, but like, I didn't get it, right? And they figured when you're a child, they want you to get the chicken pox and just get it knocked out because your body will build up the natural immune systems. That's how other viruses have worked. COVID has taught us different. When I came out to Georgia to go to school, they legit were like, you have to get a COVID vaccine. I was like, bitch, I'm growing as hell.
Chickenpox.
What did I say?
COVID.
Oh, sorry. They told me I needed to get the chickenpox vaccine and I was very confused. I was like, I'm very much into my adulthood at this point. And they were like, yeah, but you don't have it. It's deadly for adults. And to hear you say the symptoms and the shit it can cause for babies, my goodness.
I am terrified. And even the fact that you can catch it, it can be dormant in your body and then turn into shingles. You got me fucked up.
And shingles, I have met people who have experienced shingles who are not old, who have just gotten shingles, like, and you know what I mean? For whatever reason, it just popped up off with them. It is a very, very uncomfortable experience. I wouldn't wish it on anybody from what they explain.
Oh, God.
Mm. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, okay, I just thought that was interesting. I was like, y'all are living reckless.
And they just be out here sending their babies uninoculated into the world. Look, when there is still chicken pox around.
Look.
Did you hear monkeypox is spinning the block?
Monkeypox didn't go away, is my thing. And then tuberculosis is in the air. Did you hear about the mask bans in Nassau County, New York?
I did.
Currently has active COVID, tuberculosis, and bird flu in that state.
What are they trying to do?
Trying to kill us. That's all it is.
Because how do you ban masks? That's crazy.
I think people forget the beginning of COVID where we didn't have enough people. We didn't have enough morgue space and we had to.
Yeah.
And I think people forget that because I even saw like this comedy special and he was like, oh, I think we're all much better off after COVID, and one of his audience was like, no, and he like pestered them, and he was like, well, tell me for real, what did you lose? And she was like, my family.
He was like, damn, I forgot that was a real thing that people had. Yeah, he was like, you know, I keep forgetting that, you know, it wasn't just lockdown. There was people who died, like people, and you know, apologies to anybody that this may trigger, but I think that it's an important thing to talk about right now because it's going back to school time. It's the numbers are going up, and New York specifically had the whole thing where they had found like a mortuary or a crematorium or something that had bodies just piled up in the back. You know what I mean? Like they had bodies in storage containers and U-Haul trucks. Nobody wants to go back to that, but I think that there's some disconnect from what we experienced then and like where we are now. And so him telling that joke and being like, yo, so what's the... There's a lot different. The world has changed. We are not back to normal. And yeah, we've adopted some type of new normalcy, but that's because we were in a rush to get back to it.
We being corporations, because Delta's the reason why the days for COVID has gone down. So it's just be careful, you guys. Wear a mask.
As if you can, if your city is not banning that shit, goddamn.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, so my last fact is June 13th, 1995, Jagged Little Pill, which is the third studio album by Alanis Morissette, is released. I brought that up because I have mentioned this on the website, on this podcast before, where my parents were like, we need to send you to a black school, because I was in elementary school, this shit dropped, and some of my older friends were like listening to it, and I was like, I want to go to Tower Records and get a CD, and I picked up Alanis Morissette, and my mama was like, what's going on? And she led me to Brandy.
Because I literally just Googled. I was like, who?
So ironic. Isn't it ironic? Don't you think? That's Alanis Morissette. But you ought to know that angry ass song. She was, I believe, 21 when this shit dropped, which is crazy to me because this was her third album. She was the first Canadian to achieve double diamond sales with this album. She had over 33 million copies worldwide sold. It's the best selling album of all, one of the best selling albums of all times. So You Oughta Know is the song that she made for Uncle Joey from Full House, because he broke her heart and she was mad and she was like, fuck you, you oughta know about the damage that you left. You Learn is hilarious because, I mean, not hilarious, it's just like, she was 21 and she's saying, you learn, girl, how you know? At you like 21, you know what I mean? Because I went back and listened to one of the episodes and you were talking about Adele and you went in. So it's just like, this album for her to be that age is funny. The third song is Hand in My Pocket, which is one of those things that I reference echolalia, cultural music things. Certain things are very impactful to me. In that song, she says she had one hand in her pocket and the other one was smoking a cigarette, or she had one hand in her pocket and the other one was waving to people or whatever. So like, because I only remember the cigarette part, I'll randomly just change up the lyrics. I have one hand in my pocket, the other hand's waving. Toodaloo. Like, just...
That's so cute.
And then ironic. So those are the singles that dropped. It just was a fun time for music. Grunge was hot at that time. And Alanis Morissette, if you listen to that album now, the first song I think is I Just Want. I think it's called I Just Want or I Just Wanna. And she's like, I just want to fucking live in peace. And motherfuckers bother me all the time. Shit okay. Hasn't changed, Alanis.
Twin.
Wow. Concept. You know what I mean? She did her thing. She did her thing. And but she also has a different ass voice. Alanis Morissette came in the game and she was different. There was nothing like her. So
get into it. I was wondering, is grunge?
She's kind of, she was kind of, so grunge, if you think of grunge and like the Nirvana, like the look, the feel of dark, yes, that thing, right? So she has that feel in the way that she was talking about topics that were not light, they were not friendly. You Oughta Know, she literally was like, does your new bitch give you head in the theater? Bitch, because I did. She went off.
I think this was a single. Raise our standards, babe.
She's
21 also.
She was 21. Because if once you listen to it, we can go in. We can go in. Yeah, because, yeah. So, what's your last fact?
No, that was it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I will pick this up. Look.
It's the plug.
So, you guys know the plug. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Check your misogyny and massage noir.
Mm-hmm. And an update. As you've noticed, we are speaking a little bit lower. I am typically loud as fuck because that is just in my spirit to be that way. But we might start introducing something called Late Nights with AMR or ASMR with AMR. Excuse me, you don't have to let us know because Keeks, you have been like, do not email us.
Because they keep fucking signing us up for shit. Like, please.
I don't know what the hell. If I pulled up that email right now, if I pulled it up right now, I promise you the first things that I would see, there's like a bop, 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 bop of... Look, watch, hold on.
Look, I'm about to do it too because it's on my phone.
Why is it a grant watch? What did we say that made them think that we needed money like that? And why are you... I mean, thank you, but like... I don't know. So it's very interesting. Yeah, that's the plug. But we may be doing this and it'll be a softer. You might get a little every once in a while.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into the movie.
What do your lenses look like?
The lenses for the season of Por Moi. I have my copper lenses that are a single wire wrapped. And it goes, for the left side, we have the half lens and the middle nodule. The right lens is a full lens. Also the copper of it goes across the middle with the little middle nodule. We have penises hanging from the arms by the balls, and the lenses themselves are tinted because that's the kind of titties I like. That's what I'm looking for.
Yes.
What do your lenses look like?
My lenses are very thin, round lenses that stacked on each other going downwards mid-cheek. They move as one unit, with the bottom one being an areola and a nipple. The nose bridge is the Sankofa symbol because we repping saggy titties over here.
This is gonna be fun. Saggy titty supremacy. Yes, tube sock titties. We love y'all.
Let's get into the movie.
Clueless is directed by Amy Heckerling. This is our women directed it season for season 7, lucky number 7. And Amy Heckerling, girl,
what's your rating first?
I gave this raggedy bitch a 2.5 out of 10.
You know what? I gave it a 4, and I don't know if I was being generous, but I was just like, you definitely don't deserve anything higher than a 5.
Yeah. So let's get into the whys. What were your categories?
I have 3 categories, and then one thing I'm going to talk about throughout it, because I was like, I don't know how I feel about it, but I didn't know how to, I checked out. So I have girl. I have a ha ha hell bitch the fuck. And then I have my regular LOL.
Okay, but... so me in my fashion, I have multiple categories. White rich shit. What a technology letdown. I have quotables. I have my LOL. I have oh wow, and then in parentheses, it's the isms.
Okay, see, I have
a boy. What the fuck? Messages and hello was like the hand raising hello.
And see, why did you give it a 2?
Okay, so part of the reason that it kind of frustrated me is because Amy Heckerling, it says that her directorial style is that she likes to break gender norms and things like that. And looking at this, however many, like 1995 is what, they're almost 30 years ago. For me, it doesn't translate well. Like, I feel like it said her directorial style was a proto-feminist perspective, pushes gender norms within her films, and she constantly works against the sexist Hollywood status quo. I didn't get that from this.
And it also said anti-hierarchical and boundary blurring, and I'm like...
Now, the boundary blurring I can see, because she had her main character openly fall in love with not her brother, but the man who's in her house all the time because her dad trusts him as her brother.
So this film was based loosely off of Jane Austen's Emma. And Austen starts the novel by saying, I am going to take a heroine whom no one but myself will much like. And Emma is described as... spoiled, headstrong, self-satisfied, and she greatly overestimates her matching abilities. She is blind to the dangers of meddling in other people's lives, and her imaginations and perceptions often lead her astray. But in the book, she married, like, her sister married this dude, and she married his brother.
Okay.
Not bad, but, like, I was like, the stepbrother
thing... So now,
bothered the fuck out of me.
It bothered me. I think the last thing I wrote on the page as the movie was ending was ill. This is PG-13. 1995. I did not see this in theater again. It probably might have been in my grandpa's house with the VHS system because he had it decked out for us, right? This used to be one of my favorite movies, and not necessarily for the content of it, but because of the style.
Yes. Those outfits were very cute. Laughed on some of them because Stacey Dash, what is with that church hat? Girl.
All of the hats, Stacey Dash and her hats all through that, right? Stacey Dash, may she rest in peace. She plays Dion. And
may she rest in peace.
People, you know, some people speak from the grave. You see him walking around and stuff. She wanted him.
I said, like Kanye. I said professional coon and American actress.
That's it. That's it. I knew her. So she did Mo Money in 1992. When she did this movie, she was already grown as fuck. Like, I think she was in her 20s, which I appreciated because there was some sexualization of them that I did not like at all. Dion was probably the oldest. I'm sorry. Stacey Dash was probably the oldest actual person on set because she was 27.
Oh, okay, yeah, because Josh was 26, while Paul Rudd was 26, while Alicia Silverstone was 19, which I was like...
And so that made her 18 when she was filming. What's very interesting is that I know her from a music video by Aerosmith called Crazy. That, I had showed Babe it, because, you know, Babe will sit and watch with me sometimes, and so I was showing her, like, you know, this is the Crazy music video. It's actually another music video that she jumps off of a bridge and flicks people off, but she has a harness on. They think that she's gonna, you know, suicide it. Baby, Alicia Silverstone in Aerosmith videos was more impactful to me probably. That probably added to the impact of this movie, right? Mm. Because again, I told you, during this time, I was in elementary school, a lot of white people around me. When I spend the night at people's house, sometimes my mom was like, I spent the night at one white person's house.
I was going to say,
Shout out to Mary. And my mom was like, you will never do that the fuck again. Mary was my friend in fourth grade. And she actually introduced me probably to Aerosmith and those types of things. But I say that to say that Aerosmith put her in the videos and she was 17 and 18 years old. In Crazy, she was 17 and she's being sexualized. And the counterpart in the video is Liv Tyler, who is Steve Tyler's daughter. She is 18. And they go and have this scene where they go and do an amateur night at a strip club. And Alicia Silverstone is in the seat. And Liv Tyler is on the stage and she's doing the pole twirling. And it's because Alicia Silverstone was 17. Mm-hmm. So the sexualization of her started very, very early. Very early, and she was only 19 here. And what is she doing now? Probably making a very expensive ham sandwich, but she's at home making a ham sandwich.
No, she's a animal rights and environmental activist. So she's
You know what I mean.
But she has her own production company, so I think she still does, because this movie gave her. Her sophomore film earned her a multi-million-dollar deal with Columbia that included a 3-year deal with her production company, First Kiss. So the way I was like, you look familiar. Beauty Shop. So
Beauty Shop. She also did Scooby-Doo 2, which they said it flopped. But it grossed $181 million internationally. What the fuck? How much money do you need something to make?
And I mean, she's still in films because apparently there was a Scream movie in 2022 that she was in.
Listen, pop up on them.
Look, so I guess she's doing good for herself.
But like Paul Rudd, you know Paul Rudd, because that's motherfucking Ant-Man.
And the way I was like, I don't know this white man. I was like, oh, that's what Paul Rudd looks like. Okay.
So he was also in like, okay, so Roman Paul Rudd, hots, don't do me, because I'm old. He was in multiple things, including the 1996 Romeo plus Juliet, which is definitely something we're going to get into.
Romeo and Juliet. There is no other.
He was in Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. He was in 40 Old Version. He's in Knocked Up. He's in I Love You, Man. This is 40 and Anchorman 2. But you probably know him as Ant-Man. Paul Rudd, I did not know that he was 26 at the time of this movie, which is a trip to me because they made him like the crush So they made him the cute version, and I wonder how much of that is, again, conditioning. How much of this is media conditioning? Because Paul Rudd has not aged poorly, but he's no longer the sex symbol when you put him on stage, or like, put him on screen. So
I mean, he's cute, I guess, but
I
I can't pick
guess.
him out from a crowd. He
But
did,
Christian was
Christian was
hot.
adorable. Oh
He
my
was so
God.
cute.
Oh my God. He was so fucking adorable. And the way she couldn't figure out that he was fucking gay, I said, bitch.
Come
He's, I
on
was like,
now.
when he first came on the screen, I was like, oh, he's cute, but he's gay.
Did you clock it immediately?
Yes.
He was
That
so different
outfit?
and stylish. Yeah.
Girl,
I just
like,
thought, listen, young me, that's why watching this movie, again, doing this podcast is fun because I watched this movie young. I haven't seen it in such a long time that, again, maybe watching it with treating it like I'm watching it with new eyes. But I was disturbed. And then when he came on the screen, I was like, he's still cute as fuck. I don't give a damn.
I
So,
was
like, little girl me was like, ugh.
he was adorable. I was like, oh, but I was like, he's gay. And I'm like, is he not? I was in there question, he's gay, right? Don't you see that he's gay? He's talking to them folks. He asked you for money. Like, he wouldn't he be buying you a drink if he was interested? I
Come
just
on now, clock
it's
it. And it was interesting. And then we also have Donald Faison, who plays Murray, who is Dion's boyfriend. The isms that were all up and through there in the writings.
Look, and you, Amy, what's this girl name?
Heckerling.
Yes, Amy Heckerling, you were 41 when you wrote this. 40 fucking one.
Grow the fuck
Bitch.
up. What's wrong with you?
She pissed me the fuck off with that, which why the other one I wanted to mention was Brittany Murphy,
You know
who
we gonna talk about Brittany Murphy.
yeah.
Most of the quotables came from Brittany Murphy's character.
She carried this movie, no lie. She made this movie funny. She made this movie worth watching. Because between I feel like Dion and what's Donald Faison, I don't know his character
Murray.
name. Murray, I think they were both there for like comedic effect for the isms, and they didn't really have a
Absolutely.
role besides like supporting Alicia. But Alicia was too. Even when Brittany Murphy was like, "You're a virgin who can't drive," that was
Baby.
funny. But also, that's the only thing you can point out about her because she is so privileged. She is the perfect blonde. She is rich. Like the only thing you can say
Yeah.
about her is that she's a virgin and she can't drive. So,
Which is funny because Brittany Murphy later said that she herself at that time was a virgin who couldn't drive. So saying the line was funny for her, right? I also think that Brittany Murphy and Donald Faison and Paul Rudd being able to catapult themselves beyond just the limitations that could have been stereotyping them or like, pigeonholing them in this character type. Because Donald Faison, this is 1995. What he also did in 1995 was Waiting to Exhale. He was still a high school character. I don't know if of his age at the time, but in that, like, he had iconic things because that when he was getting his head shave and he like did the teeth rub over his braces, that shit is
That shit was funny. What did he say? Because I'm trying to keep it real. I'm trying to keep it real. That shit was so funny.
but that like him doing the tongue rub over his braces. When I had braces, I used to do that all the time and think of him and be like, how the fuck did he do that? Because that's like, that is not comfortable, number
That
one.
I think
Turns
it
out
was
I
fake.
no I think he had braces in Wait Next Though. He might have. They may have been
Oh.
real, but also I have a tongue tie, so not everything's possible.
Okay.
I do want to point out about Donald Faison something that I don't know that I've said this on wax before. He is the older brother to Olamide Faison, who goes by Miles. He was the lead singer of this group called Imagine that had a song called Flava and No Doubt, which I still spin because I am, if I remember it, it's part of me now, right? But he was also on Sesame Street.
That's so cute.
He was a
Oh
singer and he was like one of the characters. He came on at first as one of the stepchildren of one of the main characters, and then he became a main installment. I know he's not on this show, like he's not, but I just felt it was worth mentioning because I hope he is having a wonderful day. The
my
last
God.
time that I heard of him, he was boyfriend, he's not anymore, but he was boyfriend to former Bad Girls Club Chinny Chin Chin Natalie Nunn. So I'm grateful that he's not in that position anymore, and I hope he's having a good day.
Yeah.
How did you feel about number one, we said nigga, about the whole brother thing, but how did you feel about the fact that this is what is that? On Fridays We Wear Pink.
Valley Girl
style? No. What is that fucking Lindsay Lohan, Mean Girls? This is the original Mean Girls. How do you feel now that pop?
And I didn't want to call her a bitch because she was portraying a 16-year-old child.
15. She's like, she is 15. And you remember because when Ty says, oh, I'll be 16 in May, she's like, oh, I'll be 16 in April. So as an older person at the beginning of the day, you're 15 years old.
15 years old. She pissed me off, no lie, because I'm like, girl, she didn't want Ty and Travis to be together. But as soon as she had feelings for Josh, then it was okay. And the fact that, who was it? Dion mentioned like, oh, she loves to do makeovers. It gives her a sense of control. And it's like, but why are you trying to control other people's lives like that? She pissed me the fuck off. And I get it because like nobody tells her no. She's like, her dad's a lawyer. She has a maid.
Her mom has passed away and she's immortalized on the wall in this very 70s-esque picture, right? Because if they are 15 in 94, then she was born in 79, mom, you know, timeline.
Right. So it was interesting. It was just, and then the way the attention, whenever the attention was not on her, like when Brittany Murphy exaggerated the mall scene. She just became. She was
well,
like,
she did almost die. That shit was scary for
but
her.
But the rumor that she was almost shot by gang members, like, sis, where did that come from?
That was funny to me. I'm not going to lie. She, you know, and it's also very because they were in Beverly Hills or wherever the fuck they were, whatever area they
definitely
were in. For it to be. Out. Yeah. And for them to go to the mall, I think is already an experience of like people, poor, like you could be mixing with classes. So to add the sense of danger that it could have been a gun involved because it is the mall is very much this like white rich shit, right? Like that's a perspective thing. One of the things I want to point out is that we still don't have a technology where you can take a picture of your body at your home and have it go through the clothes in your closet and pick it out for you before you try it on.
Well, where is it? Fascinating. I was like, oh,
where is it?
Back in the 90s, where is it now?
Because some of these things, you know, we don't get immediately. I don't know what it is that we were watching it was like, oh, you know, the government had that first, right? Because typically, like, we get things trickled down to us, information. Mm-hmm. Like, they've been telling us about movies, giving us movies with alien content for years. It wasn't until motherfuckers was about to storm Area 51 that they were like, okay, fine.
Like, we got fucking know. Aliens. What
there's
you
aliens
about
in
it?
Here. What do you want? So it's like, I think that there's absolutely an opportunity for us to get some of those things. Like, because my dad thought that the Jetsons was based, I think, in like either 2004 or 2024.
It was 2020 something. We passed the date.
Okay.
We were like, oh.
And we don't have flying cars. We're still using fossil fuel. What? Why would you even give me the opportunity to think of it as a kid and not, you know?
They thought we would be dreaming bigger by now. So.
Little did they know. Dreams so deferred. Much. So what did you feel about so of course the character progression, because the title is Clueless, and if with you saying that Emma, because at first I was like Jane Austen is probably turning in her grave, with you giving background to what the book entails, I feel like maybe I would be more inclined to read the book. And
the classics tend to be so dry, I swear to God. And I get why she's important. And Jane Austen is a very, I've read Pride and Prejudice. It also took me a very long time to read Pride and Prejudice. Like, my own.
Okay.
So you can, but like, go to the Wikipedia, read the summary. Like,
you are so funny. Get the cliff notes. But that's just like, I read Girl with the Pearl Earring. And I know multiple people who read that in school as required reading. I didn't. So I picked it up just based off of, like, it was, I think, I don't know. It's me picking up books. Baby, that 300, I don't even know, maybe 258 pages. It took me 3 weeks. I was so bored. Hurry the fuck up. I thought they was getting the fucking boy. When they didn't, I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
But the specific character progression, I don't know, because it's like she wanted this college dude and like she got it in her stepbrother, which was weird, but also she had to change who she was in order to, which was for the better in a sense, like, oh, she donated, but like
she came like out of her cluelessness. It was, she came out of her cluelessness, but it was funny.
Cause like she, even the Haitian argument, she was kind of right. Like,
no, wait, the Haitians,
the government should go into the kitchen and rearrange some things.
She absolutely, but when she became a socialist with the change, when dad was like, I don't think they need your skis. They were like, she said, some people lost everything. You don't think that includes athletic equipment? Mind blown. Like, some of you bitches need to get like share. That shit was cool as shit. So the progression of it was nice, but it was all, I think most of it for me was a discomfort in how short the skirts were at all times. You know, it never rains in Southern California, so
yeah,
you know, okay. But I was like, damn, these skirts are very short, and why do we need, from a woman director, why do we need a locker room scene where half of the girls are just standing and talking in their V-cut draws and their pants, you know what I mean? Like, why do we need this? They weren't even necessarily actively getting dressed. They are talking in a group from a woman. Where was the gender norm, I go against the grain? Where was that, Amy? I don't see it.
And the fact that this was supposed to be, this has a cult following. It really does. But it don't like the things that it teaches young women. Like, what the fuck is
that? That's how I really support you in feeling like that, because I kind of feel like, because this came out when I was young and in an impressionable age, watching it with hindsight, I'm like, how much of this affected my way of thinking and how I went about certain things? Not necessarily that these were attainable, because I knew that I didn't have money to be able to do certain things.
Right.
But did I think that proximity is a reason why you should be attracted to somebody? Is that something I still deal with? Because, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if how I feel like Jane Austen may not support what she, if she were to be able to see it, she may not have liked the rendition.
I just don't understand why he couldn't be a childhood friend, like come over from next door. It would have made a lot more sense. Or
your stepbrother's law school person, like a friend of his. Like, why the fuck did it have to be your stepbrother, even if it's no relation? That's gross. Right.
And they were like, oh, we haven't seen each other in 5 years, and it was short, but that's still weird.
And yeah, and I, but it's also interesting to me, because we've seen in other movies where it's like, oh, like white people, are your first loves, are your middle school, high school crushes, do they come out as gay? Are you guys like, so maybe this is something that we are, it's a miss for us, but for them, because again, we are not the target audience, we know that, but maybe it's for them something that hits, where that proximity doesn't mean that it's not off limits for them. Where as for us, if you my play cousin and been my cousin since I was six, there's no way I would ever do anything with you.
Because you're my cousin.
You're my cousin. Like,
that's how porn categories are made, though. Because that's immediately what I thought after I saw this. I was like, oh, really?
So culturally impactful, because I didn't even think about that, because that whole... My stepbrother
fucking my stepsister. And I'm like, that's weird.
I skip past all of that, even though I know that you're only using it for the click of it, because it's going to bring in what you need, which is when they view it, you get paid, right? I get that. I skip past it because it's uncomfortable for me. I don't like the idea of that being the engagement that you're having with somebody that you're calling that type of relation.
And honestly, if what you said is true, and like that's like okay for white people, it just makes me think, like, especially with this the type of impact this film has made. You just made it okay for a whole bunch of people to be like, oh, it's okay to, like, we're not related, so it's okay to,
we're not them. Blood related, it right. doesn't, you know what I mean? So it, that right. whole, like, that's, oh, semantics, we're getting into semantics, yeah. that's how you feel about it. So,
but mind you, this is also people that date their cousins, so
come on now. So and because this is a Jane Austen rendition, I was thinking when I saw it in the notes that that was, oh, it's based off of Emma. I said, oh, well, maybe Jane was like, ah, I let my brother, who's not my brother, but he's lived with us for, I let him sniff the panties, but I ain't really do nothing with. I was kind of thrown, but I attributed it to the fact that maybe that was a time thing. No, this was an Amy Heckerling decision.
At 41 is my thing, too. Like, you are 41 years old. One, I don't feel comfortable. Okay, it's important for women to tell women's experiences, but why are you telling a teenage girl's experience in this specific way?
Yeah.
Like, because yes, we do need more adolescents going into young adult kinds of representation, but maybe not like this. So,
and I'm wondering, I did not catch how long between her writing it and her being able to actually get into the directing and doing that. But what I know is that she said that she saw Alicia Silverstone, or Alicia, I think it's Alicia Silverstone in the Aerosmith videos, and she knew in her mind that she wanted her for the character of Cher. So while she was writing this and sexualizing her, she was seeing a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old child, and deciding that she was going to put her in this position. And as soon as she hit 19, she, like, it was uncomfortable. Now, Amy Heckerling, because culture, like, as far as it being culturally impactful, some of the quotables that are in there, the outfits
were cute. When he said, when Donald Faison, let me find it, he said the disco dancing Oscar Wilde reading Stranzine.
He's gay, but the
even the clock is
teeth. My boy said, y'all don't funny. See this.
This shit was hilarious.
The writing was great. I can imagine that was probably part of the audition tape. Like, let's see how you're going to deliver this line specifically, because it can't be, as much as it's homophobic, it can't be hateful.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was very derogatory, but like
as fuck. But it was funny, like, as funny fuck.
Also, we're queer, so like,
I'm allowed to laugh at that shit.
You don't,
and you not. And if Amy Heckerling is not out here licking the cat every once in a while, she ain't allowed to write.
Look, that's the other thing too. She's not. She's been married twice. One to a David. One to a Neil.
And what's interesting, okay, so one of our practice run movies was Night at the Roxbury. We didn't talk about her in this film, during that time. So that was when we were making adjustments and trying to figure out what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
But she also did Johnny Dangerously. Her breakout film was Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which I've never watched, but I quote as like, oh, bad times at Ridgemont High. Like, mm-hmm. Or like Bad News Bears. Like, I'll say that all the time. I haven't seen those movies. She also did National Lampoon's European Vacation. She did Look Who's Talking. She did Loser. Something I don't know what that is. I Could Never Be Your Woman and Vamps in 2012. But what's interesting is that her and Chris Kattan, who was in Night at the Roxbury, they said that he did a memoir, and he said that somebody made him sleep with her to be able to.
I saw that. And she was only a producer for Night at the Roxbury. You weren't even the director, babe. But that's still messed up.
And her daughter was like, bruh, Chris Kattan, she had been having an affair with him. She was like, her daughter's come out and was like, he used to be at my house. Like, I came home from school and that fool was at my house way before the movie. So shut the fuck up. So, you know, it just was, I just thought it was interesting that as a writer, producer, director, she does have some very impactful things. This is a cult classic for a reason. I just don't see where they were saying that she has this, like, go against the grain. Like, I don't. I don't see that from this. So,
but you know, good try. Good try. After 40 years of it, I just can't get over that she wrote this and directed. This is what you produced at 41. And like, yeah, maybe I haven't produced this at 41, but also I know I can make something better than this.
By the time 41 come, I'll, you know. Well, this is the thing. She had the backing of Paramount Pictures, a budget of $12 million.
That's what it is.
And Paramount, the intro, as soon as it came on, the colors and things like that, it's very 90s. And part of me got kind of giddy. Like, again, I think there was rewatching this as an adult was not even just as an adult, but as an adult for the podcast, it was kind of conflicting because the child part of me was like about things that I remembered, but I haven't seen the movie in a very long time. So it was nostalgia, right? Mm-hmm. Taking away from the nostalgia and just looking at the movie as though I've never seen it before, I was like, this is gross. I don't think it ages well. I think the best thing about it is the fashion, and that's not a representation of necessarily. Amy probably said she wanted short ass shorts, like short skirts, and she probably wanted Dion, whatever. But the decision for Dion to have a hat, that probably was the fashion person. That wasn't Amy.
Yeah. And if anything, some of those styles were, there were some
stereotypical.
Yeah. Some of them didn't make sense, honestly. The little sheer shirt that why would you wear that? You need a spaghetti strap, babe. Like, it bothered me.
So like, the little, I think it's called credenza or whatever the fuck that's called. The fact that that's coming back, because when I tell you, I have an idea that is, when she came down in that white outfit and her dad was like, put something on, and she put that shit on, I cracked up because what did you cover up? But I also have the idea to wear that same outfit, but with colors, not white. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, I have a green jacket that's something like that, that I can wear bright ass colors underneath, just tight bodysuits, cat suits, like prop. And I'm like, damn, is that from Clueless? Like, I already have that in my closet. I already had that as an outfit idea. Watching the movie, I was like, oh my God, it's. So, you know, what were your ticks for your categories?
So Girl had 22, and a lot of that was Cher and Amy, and a little bit of Brittany, because, like, you only known that man for a night, and I'm like,
The obsession. Is some of that a part of my makeup now?
I'm going to burn the towel that we had that he
did. I didn't tell you, but I bought the CD, the tape. She was like, don't burn that, because Cher was already an environmentalist.
Right. But still, I'm like, girl, I don't miss that part of like being a child.
Crushes are fun, though.
Crushes are fun, but I don't like, that's that kind of limerence that we're trying to avoid, though.
And baby, learning that term has very much been something that I'm like, and also because, like, on the low, I'm in love with all of my friends. Like, I love y'all so deep that there's, like, this, like, I don't obsess in that way, though. So seeing that, it's not a part of my makeup, but it was, like, to reflect on it and be like, damn, you really put that in a movie in my little young ass and everybody else in 1995, who may not have been my age, but everybody was seeing this. So, like, maybe the porn cat, maybe it's not something that white people were doing. Maybe this movie was a part of the impact that became my stepbrother, because people who watched this in 1995 watched Cher tongue her stepbrother down at a wedding and then had some old lady being like, ooh, hey, brother, that's you. What the fuck is going on here?
And nobody questioned. Everybody was all right with it.
What did your daddy say?
And the teenagers have big feelings, and you're still learning how to regulate them. So of course they're going to have these big emotions, and everything is a big deal. So that one night was the world to tie. So,
but then the fact that Cher literally, she's like, well, they shared that kiss, and she's like, so you can imagine what happened next. You had sex with your stepbrother in your daddy's house. That was absolutely the creation of the porn category.
And why was your dad okay with it?
They don't know. We don't know that daddy's okay, because he don't pop up after they start having any type of crushing. We don't see him pretty much anymore. Daddy's so busy on that case.
I thought he was okay with it, because he was like, oh, you're not going to be helpful. He was like, can I go to the party? He's like, you're not going to be helpful here. Go ahead.
No, he said, do what you, he was distracted. He was like, do what you want to do. If you think, he was like, well, I'll watch him for you. And he said, if you think that'd be helpful, because he trusts his daughter, even though, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And he shouldn't be missed. The fuck? Okay, I'm sorry. Start your tics again for me, babe.
So girl had 22. Ahaha, hell bitch, the fuck had 11. LOL had 27. I'm telling you, this movie was
because it was funny.
It was like randomly funny. The we're not gonna, we can leave our suicide attempts till later. I laughed.
That's the writing is randomly funny. I did laugh.
It's randomly funny. So yeah, so and I appreciate that. I would love to see more of that. And then Brittany Murphy is like comedy gold in this. Her in between the two people, her hitting her head twice.
Rolling with the homies. But I tell you, I used to sing that randomly all the time. And I knew white girls used to be like, I can sing. And you'd be like, again, some of my experiences. And I'd be like, oh, let me hear it. Like, rolling with culturally impactful. I'm not gonna lie. Okay, so my tics go as follows. White rich shit has 16. What a technology letdown has 5. Quotables has 7. LOL has 14. Oh wow, quotation, the isms, has 10. Boy, what the fuck has 22. Messages has 10. And hello with the hand raise has 13.
Yeah, my ahaha hell bitch the fuck was the isms, because I was like,
I could see that.
Why, you said the Mexican, you said the El Salvadorian maid was Mexican
and then didn't understand and but had the argument for the Haitians, and like the cognitive dissonance is really a thing.
And the fight between Dion and Murray about the hair extension, which I'm like, bitch, you know,
in front of everybody, and it being and it drawing a crowd so fast, like they were not the only black people at the school, but for them to be a regular spectacle for the people at the school, for everyone to know to come around, it just was. There were things that I am. Oh, they do this all the time.
But how you knew it was a spectacle is because at one point in the movie, Cher was like, oh, when nobody's looking, Dion and Murray are very sweet to each other.
They're bitch, so considerate.
Why did you write them like that?
Why do you want these black people to be putting on a spectacle for the
because
rest
they're
of
always entertainment for you.
You know what
a
I mean?
Big ass so, of 41.
Big, you showed yourself, Amy. And I wonder how many of these other films that she's done that she would also be showing herself.
Because the degenerates always sagged, and I was like, why?
Even but that was also the during the grunge, and if you weren't grunge, if you were a skateboarder, the pants were huge.
Really?
When I tell you, they used to, yes, because they were wearing like sweats. They would have on full sweatpants underneath their pants, and it wasn't because of the style. It's because they were skateboarders. They were landing hard and heavy.
Oh,
so it was a cushion, you know what I mean? So some of that like, had they zoomed out a little bit, I wonder if the shoes, like Travis's shoes, did you see how poofy they were?
Mm-hmm.
It's for you to be able to have padding so you're not twisting your ankles, so you're not landing hard. Like, skateboard culture is a real thing in Southern California, and that was actually depicted pretty well.
Okay, but yeah. The Tina Turner joke, I was like, bitch. The way Cher was like, I feel ratchet, and Stacey Dash letting people touch her hair, like,
It just was, you know, Amy Heckling, you really showed yourself. You did. Our ranking on this is a 3.25 out of 10, which of course we are going to be completely off the mark with the rest of the world. IMDb gave this a 6.9 out of 10, and Rotten Tomatoes has this at an 81%.
6.9, 81. You didn't feel some type of way when...
They didn't. In real time, they pulled $88 million in revenue.
Because maybe it's American culture. Because Dion and Cher being virgins while Ty wasn't, it was like the this versus that. The good versus, it's weird.
The class, the accent, the, you know, the bad hair dye when she first got there. Like, or not, it was a box hair. You know, there was a lot of little judgments and stuff. So...
And they thought they were more Cher than they were Ty, possibly. So
And they wanted to be able to see themselves as like, I was Ty, and now I'm more Cher, even if they weren't teenagers anymore.
That's true.
Because we've talked about how white people use not even just people of color or language. They'll use people who are lower in financial, economic statures to step on them and then come back and be like, oh, let me make amends because now I'm such a good person and I'm rectifying by, oh, I donate every year. But at one point, you and your friends used to like be, you know what I mean?
Right. Terrible human beings, but like, this was an interesting movie, and I do remember Clueless, but I only remember Alicia Silverstone in that yellow plaid outfit. And because the fact it was that
iconic.
Stacey Dash was in it. That was it. So
Stacey Dash and all of the hats. The thing about this is that this went on. They turned this into a good run. Okay. There were people, Donald Faison and Stacey Dash both ended up being a part of the TV show that they did as the spinoff.
Yes.
And then, so they also did like, I think it was like a game or something, but they really were trying to make sure like they got all of the full money from this. They really did. Brittany Murphy, you know, she voiced Luann on King of the Hill.
Yeah.
She rest in peace. She really was an iconic actress, and Paul Rudd is still doing things. So, you know, there's some success that came from this. And because it is a cult classic, there were people who wanted to see what those people were going to continue to do. And for that, show enough. Yeah. I think that our ranking is valid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so
that's the episode, you guys. We will see you again for episode 88.
Yeah. We got this thing. No, Little Hearts, Big Hearts.
Little Hearts, Big Hearts, all the hearts. See you later. Bye. Hey.